This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Man, this week seems like it's gone pretty quickly. I guess it's because there's been an awful lot to be talking about and speculating. We're closing in quickly on another big college football weekend. And Auburn, of course, the latest team to have an interim head coach as they'll take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. We'll talk about that and more. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer will be joining us here shortly. We'll get his thoughts on the coaching change from Hugh Freeze. Maybe get his thoughts on some of the guys he likes as possible candidates. And, of course, Ferguson, a big, you're not going to find anyone who is better at covering Auburn basketball than Justin. And the Tigers look to go 2-0 tonight as they take on Merrimack. And, Don, I said they ought to be the Monitors. I mean for those folks that aren't, Civil War buffs or anything, the Monitor and the Merrimack. But,
right.
Take on Merrimack tonight over at the arena, and that is a 7 o'clock tip. So we'll talk about that as well and get Justin's thoughts on Auburn's season opener this past Monday night, the overtime win for the Tigers against Bethune-Cookman. So we'll do that and more. And then in hour number two, as usual, we will check in with David Paschal from Chattanooga. David, of course, a longtime writer with the Chattanooga Times Free Press and has been in radio quite a while as well. He's wrapping up. As a matter of fact, he's starting his final hour on WGOW, not his final hour, period, the final hour of his show. He goes 2 to 5 hour time every day on WGOW. So we'll check in with David in hour number two, and we welcome your calls as well. We'd love to hear from you, anything on your mind sports-wise. There's no question. I think by now, most Auburn fans have in their own mind sort of a short list of potential candidates to replace Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, I think you're right, Bill. When it first happens, there's a million names. People sometimes just throw out the craziest names you've ever heard. But I listened to you on the afternoon show today when you were on the other radio show.
I'm with Doug.
Yeah, and I think you guys hit it on the head. Those three names are pretty popular, and I would be shocked if they went outside of any of those three names.
Well,
I don't know.
I added a fourth because it seemed like it felt like starting yesterday there was more and more talk about Eli Drinkwitz.
Yeah, and he's been here. And
that is right. He was at Auburn for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And he's done a heck of a job at Missouri.
He's done a heck of a job. It's not a traditional football power. I mean,
no kidding.
High school football and all that in that area. I mean, he's done a great job.
I mean, Eli went in and they struggled when he first went to Missouri. His first 3 years, 5-5, 6-5, it was 5-5, then 6-7, and 6-7. I don't think it's coincidental either. Then he gave up play calling. He turned the play calling over to Kirby Moore, who is a younger brother of Kellen Moore, I mean, and a player that he had coached when he was at Boise.
Right.
And since then, since he has become the CEO, if you will, all he's done at Missouri is go 11-2, 10-3, and he's 6-2 this year.
Yep. Very impressive. And like we said, that is a hard place to win. And I think, like you talked Monday when I was in, these guys, and it's hard to do, I think they're better off when they, give up the – play calling.
Well, there's so much. I mean,
especially now.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been a lot involved with being a head coach, but now there's even more with roster retention, NIL, the transfer portal.
Yeah.
So many different things you have to be keeping
raising
up with.
Money, like you said. Just
yep, absolutely.
A lot of stuff that we didn't have to worry about.
But we'd love your thoughts on anything. How do you think you'll see something different from Auburn this week at Vandy? I think you'll see a more aggressive offense. Mm-hmm. I think Derek Nix and the Auburn offense gonna. I think they're gonna be more dedicated to the run.
Good.
And that doesn't hurt when you have a former running back as your offensive coordinator now.
No.
But I think they'll also take more shots downfield.
Yep. I agree. I think they'll play hard. I think they'll be excited to play. Nothing to lose. All the pressure's on Vanderbilt.
So, it really is. If they want to stay alive in the playoff picture.
And so I think we'll do well. I say that every week. But if we run the football, I know we'll do well.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And while we're trying to get in touch with Justin Ferguson, let's go ahead and get to the Drive Hotline. And Jones gets us started. Hey, Jones, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Bill and Coach. And y'all stole a little bit of my thunder pertaining to my question. Coach, I know that you're a defensive guy, and you also don't speak disparagingly of anybody, but if you were Derek Nix and you had four days or less to install something to beat Vanderbilt Saturday, what exactly would you do from the standpoint of differentiating the offense from what it's been, without obviously disparaging the previous offensive coordinator?
Right.
Hang up and listen, please.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it, Jones.
Thank you. I would put in a lot of motion, a lot of shifting the tight end, and just run the same plays with different formations and different motions. I would like to see us run the counter. I'd like to see an inside trap, which I haven't seen, and, outside-inside zone. But just, get the ball downhill, get it to our best, some of our best players on offense or our running backs, and then that's going to open up the passing game with some play-action passes, and then take your shots down the field. Not across the middle, try to get a guy beat. I'd like to see the backs get the ball out of the backfield on a little swing pass, even a screen once in a while. But, yeah, I would like to see a lot of shifts and motion. That always causes problems. Even a little bit of unbalanced line, I was thinking this week maybe he might come out with. And anything to disrupt the defense, we can't just sit in the same formations that we've done, because Vandy's got all of our tape, and that guy's a good coach. He's a defensive coach.
Yeah, Clark Lee, there's no question about it. I just wonder how much can you put in that you haven't been practicing on in 4 days?
Well, what I'm saying is you run the same plays, you just add a motion man. That's easy.
Just
send a guy in motion or unbalanced. But you're right. You can't change the whole playbook. That would be crazy. Yeah.
Now, after the Vandy game, Auburn's got an open date,
right.
And you can do some more things there before that Mercer game and be working on them in the Mercer game or holding some things until that next week against Alabama.
I guarantee you that will happen.
334-321-1390 right now. We're going to head to the Drive Hotline and welcome in Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, who, when there's not he's either not on the road getting ready to cover someone, or as in the case of today, basketball game on campus tonight, is with us in the studio quite a bit on Thursdays, but we're fortunate to have him joining us on the Drive Hotline. Hey, Ferg, how's it going today?
I'm all right. How are y'all?
Doing pretty well. I don't know if you heard the little the question from Jones there to sort of start the show. What do you think or what do you feel Auburn could do to try to bring some life to this offense against Vandy?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough because, if you're sticking with Ashton Daniels, you're probably not prioritizing your passing game as much. And I feel like that's the way to attack Vandy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was supposed to be the way to attack Kentucky, too. It's just it's tough. I like what Coach Dunn said there. It's like you might have to run some of the same stuff, but just do it in a different way. Just do it in a different look. That might be the best that you can kind of get this, this quickly. And, I said this earlier in the week, like when Auburn fired Harsin in 22 – Will Friend, who had been an offense coordinator in the past, they handed the keys to him and said, all right, go for it. And he comes in and very, very simple with Robbie Ashford, but they pair it down and they just stick to the ground game and make it work. I don't know if there's a switch like that happening. I mean, this is still the same playbook, same coaches, same coaching tree for the most part. So I do question how much can change, but, you know, it might have to be some stuff that's like, okay, show some different things and just execute it better. That might be your best bet, you know, when you have a short amount of time between these two games.
You know, as far as the coaching change that was made, I don't think there's anyone who was watching Saturday that was surprised Sunday when a move was made.
Not at all. I mean, we've been talking about it for the past month when a move could be made, and I thought, you know, people were looking forward after the Missouri game, and I said, you know, I remember saying like, yeah, that's a good team. You took them to double overtime,
right.
Like, you know, that's a little. You have a winnable game this upcoming week. I had said I think you have to kind of hit rock bottom. Well, guess what? You hit rock bottom on the offensive end against Kentucky. It's one of the most lifeless, you know, offensive performances I can remember Auburn seeing, given the quality of opponent they were playing. To do it at home, to look like an offense that just didn't have any belief that they were going to do anything different. And that's the thing. It's ultimately, like, you hear it with John Cohen earlier this week in that press conference. I mean, they fired Hugh Freeze because he did not deliver on having an offense that people were used to seeing out of him. And it was a big reason why he was hired in the first place. So, yeah, they had to hit rock bottom. They did, and now they are on the market.
Yeah, and it's really early now. We heard John Cohen say that, you know, he'd like to have a replacement named as soon as possible after the Iron Bowl. How likely do you think that is to happen?
It depends on kind of what, like, who it is, right? You know,
right.
I think if it's a coach who's going to be in the conference title game for whoever, wherever he's at, it's going to be a little bit tougher to do. You know, I think the most revealing part of that whole press conference was not necessarily the fact of who we, like, it was in that question and answer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was your question, Bill.
Yeah.
It wasn't that, you know,
they're coaching.
Here's the timeline, but yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, we want somebody who's coaching. And if we're hiring, anybody we interview outside of the building is going to be somebody who's coaching right now, either going to be in a bowl game or going to be in the playoff. And it's like, well, that's pretty significant because there's several names out there that people have already tossed around in regards to Auburn who aren't current sitting coaches in college football with winning teams. So I thought that was a really, really fascinating kind of bit of insight there. But it makes sense, right? You know, I think if you're Auburn, I wrote about this earlier in the week when Freeze got fired. You know, they rolled the dice on Hugh Freeze and wanted him to kind of, okay, let's see if he could be what he was at Ole Miss. Let's give him that second chance in the SEC. Well, the problem is now it's been 10 years since Hugh Freeze has had a really good offense in the SEC, a really good season in the SEC. So I think for Auburn right now, you're looking at a situation where you want to find somebody who is doing well winning right now. Like when Auburn hired Freeze from Liberty, remember, they'd fallen off towards the end there. I think trying to get a coach on the upswing, I think it's pretty telling about what their priorities are going to be in the search.
Yeah, and really, you look now at the top teams nationally, and how many of those had big name coaches who they brought from somewhere else, someone who had won big at another place. Not many. There are a couple. I mean, Kalen DeBoer had won at Washington. There's no question about that.
Sure.
And Lane Kiffin had a track record, but he hadn't really won big, but he was a name. He was more of a name. But a lot of these guys were not big names. Matter of fact, quite a few of them weren't even head coaches when they were brought into to the schools where they're now in the top 10.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, this day and age of college football, I think with it being the parity being what it is, with the transfer portal being what it is and all that, you are seeing different teams rise up, you know, and contend. We are living in a world where Indiana is maybe the best team in college football.
Yes.
We're living in a world where Vanderbilt has a shot to make the playoff this year. And if that's the case, you can say, okay, you know, you can get talent and you can get win. And it's Indiana and Vandy, right? Like, it's the Big Ten and the SEC. It's the two best conferences in college football. Like, it's not like, oh, well, these teams are beating up on, you know, like lesser thans and skating in that way. No, these these are coaches that are competing in the biggest conferences in the sport. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a lot about fit, right? I look at Texas A&M and Mike Elko. They go get Mike Elko because, you know, not because, you know, he had lit the world on fire at Duke. He was good at Duke. He was really good at Duke. But it was the Duke head coach, right? And so it was just like that. He had that experience. He had that prior relationship. They knew that it would make sense, and he felt like a right fit. So that's the thing, is like this coaching carousel, yeah, somebody's trying to get Lane Kiffin. Somebody's trying to get, you know, maybe see if they can pry another big name out from somewhere. But, you know.
You hear the Marcus Freeman talk because it's so tough to get players into Notre Dame, that type thing. But then I look at A&M, and A&M got Mike Elko, you know, after they flirted with Mark Stoops, who now is on such thin ice at Kentucky.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that's a fascinating thing there. It's just it fit matters, right? And I said this on our podcast today that people can go check out if they're Observer subscribers. But one of the things that stands out to me about the Elko situation is, you know, I hear a lot of like, well, we got to go get somebody who can recruit here. And I'm like, here's my take on recruiting at Auburn. I think you just saw with Hugh Freeze that a recruiting alone is not going to fix your problems. You've got to be able to win on Saturdays. You know, yes, you need to recruit, but that's not the priority. The priority should be winning football games on Saturdays. And I think Elko's a perfect example. When A&M went and got Elko back from Duke, it wasn't Mike Elko was an elite recruiter. It was Mike Elko's winning football games. And when you bring a winning football coach in and he wins at a place like A&M where you have the money and the resources and the access to talent, guess where A&M's right now? Recruiting out of their minds. They're a top five class in the country right now without Elko having that rep in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think Auburn's a very similar place. I know Brian Harsin did not recruit well at Auburn. Brian Harsin didn't try to recruit well at Auburn.
No, you're right.
I think this is a place where if you win football games, people are going to come and play for you. There's just too much going on there. So that's why I think the pool opens up and kind of expands more, where you don't have to sit here and say, oh, we need to get somebody who's really proven to recruit and do all this at this level. I think you can get it from different varying ways, and I think the proof is in what college football looks like right now.
Well, you've got to have somebody that understands that it takes it all. It takes talent and then development and coaching and the resources. I mean, look at the job Jimbo Fisher did recruiting at A&M. He brought in tremendous talent. Now, it sure doesn't hurt when Mike Elko goes to an A&M team that has a lot of talent. And that's sort of the situation that if Auburn can retain, you know, a decent portion of its roster, the next head coach would have at Auburn.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it was a backhanded statement, you know, for a reason. But, like, there was a reason why John Cohen's statement talked about, man, hey, we are pleased with how he has raised the talent level of our program and upgraded our roster. Because true, he did. Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything with it, you know, on Saturdays as much, but he did do that. And I think, I think the parallels between Jimbo and Hugh Freeze were way too obvious, right? You know, I think these were guys that had done so well in the past, but the game might have passed them by. They could be great recruiters. They could have some good moments. But, like, it had gotten further and further away from their heyday. And I think now for Auburn, you just got to have somebody who is thinking, like, who's winning now and thinking, like, okay, you know, what does this vision look like in the future? What does, you know, what does a coach like that, you know, translate? How does that translate? Whether you're looking at a group of five head coach or a sitting power conference head coach or whatever, you know, could you see what that person is doing in their current situation? Apply it at Auburn, what kind of results do you think you can get on the other side of it? And I think there's several options that make a lot of sense there.
Oh, yeah. And one other thing that it appears is becoming more and more of a dinosaur, and that's a head coach who's a play caller.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing everybody wants to talk about. Like, you know, pop quiz if you haven't heard it yet. Who's the last head coach to win a national championship with Colin Blaze? Jimbo Fisher. Who was the one before? Do you know this one, Bill? Do you know who
no,
the
I
one
don't.
Before is?
No. Golly, let's see.
Tom Osborne.
Wow. My
Tom
goodness.
Tom Osborne.
Man.
Yeah.
So, no, I did not know
you're
that.
Talking about now. Yeah, you're talking about like basically three decades of college football now where you've had two play callers win national championships.
And it's That's tougher and tough. Tougher now. Very, There's so much tough. More head coaches have to do. So who are a couple of guys that you feel looked like, you know, possible good fits at Auburn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not going to shock anybody here when the first name I say is going to be John Summerall at Tulane. He is the name that I've heard the most connected yep. to Auburn in mutual ways for the last few days. I think he's a great fit. I wrote about earlier this week when the move was made. I think his background reminds me a lot of what Auburn got out of Pat Dye when they hired him. Now, I'm not saying he's the same coach. It's a different game. It's a different sport. It's several decades later. But you're talking about a guy who was a coach in this league, an assistant coach in this league, played in this league, and then proved himself as a Group of Five coach, a mid-major coach. He's done it at several different places now. And he's an Alabama guy, and I think it's the fit. I think his teams win games, and I'll tell you from. I can admit here that I've got a lot more insight on this one because I grew up a Troy fan.
Right.
Troy had three straight losing seasons when Summerall got the job there at Troy. Back to back, 10-11 win seasons, won the Sun Belt, and now he's at Tulane. So I think that's a really, really good fit. I think there's a reason why there's a lot of buzz. I like the defense angle as well after all this stretch of offensive coaches. I think that would be an interesting fit there. But there are others. If Auburn decided to jump in the Eli Drinkwitz sweepstakes, I think it would be a really good fit for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eli, obviously knows Auburn, has always, every time I've heard his talked very highly about Auburn, seems to have great respect for the people there, people here, and I think he's an example of a guy who's winning in the SEC right now, and Auburn can just offer more just because Auburn's a bigger program than Missouri. It's got more resources, more access to talent. That would make a ton of sense. There are others. This is kind of in the same ballpark, these two that I'm about to mention, maybe the third one. I like Brent Key at Georgia Tech a lot. I think Brent Key is a guy that has that kind of old school mentality, that edge
right.
that John Cohen was talking about earlier this week. I like him. I like what he's doing at Georgia Tech. I think the guy they're going to play on Saturday in Clark Lee would be a heck of a hire because I think you're getting some of the same stuff there, and you can at least pitch, okay, yes, you're at your alma mater, and that'd be tough to get you out of, but Auburn can offer more. And then the wild card that I like to keep hearing about, just because I think it's a fun one. Kenny Dillingham's done great work at Arizona State in a short amount of time. He's at his alma mater, but
right.
he was very well liked in his year here. And I think he can do good things in the Big 12 at his home in Arizona State, obviously. But if he has a desire to be a head coach of a national championship team, Auburn could be a move to the SEC, a move to Auburn could be the place for him, and I think he'd be a fun one as well.
And he's done a pretty good job with quarterbacks, finding him and coaching him. Sam Levitt was having a great year till he got hurt. Your national player of the week this past week is Jeff Sims, who's bounced around, was at Alabama, and he had the best game of his career this past week for Kenny.
Yeah, and Kenny's done a really good job, I think. He overachiever, He's mm-hmm. a guy that they didn't make excuses when he got Arizona State. He inherited an absolute disaster
oh, yeah.
at Arizona State with the Herm Edwards thing. And they took it on the chin in year one. And then in year two, they're picked to finish dead last in the league. They win it and make the playoff. Like, he has been a guy that has done a lot. You mentioned those quarterbacks he's worked with. Also, consider the fact that two of the best years of Bo Nix's life came with Kenny Dillingham, coaching him up. So I think there's a good parallel. There's a lot of good parallels there. And he's young. Summerall's young, too. Some of these guys I mentioned are on the younger end, which I think is a good move. But, like, get somebody in here who's got that energy, that fight, that, somebody who's going to pour everything into, getting Auburn football, back on track. And if you can get back to being a winning program, you could have a coach here for a while that can put
yep.
you at a championship level. I think that would be a really good thing for Auburn.
Yeah, I really love the fact that all these guys are, Kenny's 35 and the rest of them are in their 40s. So, yeah, you have the
yeah,
possibility
Kenny,
of being able
Kenny's
to keep somebody for a while.
Kenny's barely older than me, and it's just kind of crazy to think about how much he's accomplished already. It really is. I think when I asked Cohen earlier the week about like what he had learned from the first search
mm-hmm.
that he would apply to the second one, I think it was very interesting that his answer was it's just a different group of candidates. He thinks that there's a bigger and like more diverse list of candidates this time around, and I
think so
agree.
Too.
yeah, I don't think Auburn's got to go make the Brian Kelly or the Lane Kiffin, or not Lane Kiffin, the Lincoln Riley hire to have a good hire here. But I mean, just look around college football. If you find your guy that fits you mm-hmm. and you give him time, it might not take long for you to start contending again.
Justin Ferguson with the Auburn Observer with us here on the Thursday Drive. We need to get to break. Want to talk a little basketball. Tigers looking to go 2-0 tonight as they take on Merrimack. And if anybody knows anything about Merrimack, I'm counting on it to be Ferg. So we will talk to him about that when we come back. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Brennan and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Dan's got Troy women's basketball again tonight. He'll be back tomorrow. The Auburn basketball team will play its second game of the regular season tonight after winning in overtime over Bethune-Cookman on Monday night. Tonight hosting Merrimack. And Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining us here on the show. He'll be over there in that if not sell out, pretty darn close to it at the Auburn Arena. Ferg, wasn't the prettiest game the other night. It was a fun game to watch, but I mean, obviously a game that can bring quite a few teaching moments for Stephen Pearl.
Yeah, 100%. I think the thing for Auburn is they reverted to some of their issues they had against Oklahoma State on the defensive end. I think it's a lack of experience and kind of consistency, chemistry with one another on defense. I also think, for the rim protection, I mean, they need Keyshawn Murphy back and healthy. I think there's a mm-hmm. big difference in the game when he was in there.
Oh, yeah.
And so they need to kind of find a way to get him healthy and get him ready to go there, because I think he is such a big-time difference maker down low as a rim protector. But, yeah, it's just you got a pretty new lineup. Still learning one another, still learning this system. I think Auburn can do a better job of executing what they had called on defense, and I think they also could get a little more creative. I like when this team plays zone. I like when this team kind of goes with some pressure stuff, but I thought they did a really good job of, at the end of the game, not panicking, not getting too wound tight. They were in a bad situation. People were frustrated. It's all that's understandable. But you got to go out there and get it done. And I thought the end of the game in regulation and then in overtime, they responded to adversity really well. And you had some guys step up and make some winning plays down the stretch. And it's good composure and good kind of just management, I thought, from Stephen Pearl at the end. A lot you can work on. They're going to have to play a lot better. But if this is the floor, if this is what – this is what, in terms of your own performance, if it can only go up from here with a new team, I think, doing it after a win is definitely going to be what they want.
Oh, there's no question about that. A couple of things that felt pretty good about going in and just confirmed. Keyshawn Hall is a scorer, and he's going to be difficult for anybody to really hold down point-wise.
He is, and I mean, he's as good of an ISO scorer as they had. The fit within this offense is interesting, just because I don't think Auburn has had a guy like that before. A guy who wasn't a point guard who's really good at saying, "Hey, give me the ball, get out of the way. I'm either getting to the free throw line or I'm getting a bucket here." Like, that's something I think they're going to have to do a good job of kind of adapting that and kind of honing that into the system more. But obviously he makes a huge difference in that game. Auburn, terrible at free throws in the first half, second half in overtime, mm-hmm. they barely missed any. And he was a key part of that for sure. Paul, I think he's got to continue to work on his defense. That's never had to be a priority for him.
Right.
In his college career, it's going to have to be if you're going to play at Auburn. So it'd be very interesting to see how it goes. But yeah, I mean, he is a matchup problem for pretty much anybody. And I thought in this game, had some turnovers, had some missed shots, had some frustrating moments. But, you look up and he still has over 20 points. I think he's going to do that a lot this season.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You mentioned rim protection. Were you a little surprised that Emeka Purim didn't play any the other night?
I was, and I asked Stephen Pearl about it after the game, and he said, look, you know, we think we want him to be ready. They kind of have him as the third option at center right now. He said, look, if the rim protection continues to look like this, we might have to turn to him.
Yeah.
Offense for him, just learning the offense and being more confident in that area. I think Filip Jovic is farther along in that area, so that's why he's getting more of those 5 minutes, you know, over a Porum. And I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about him here. We can just go ahead. I mean, Sebastian Williams-Adams looked pretty good at the five.
Yeah, no kidding. He doesn't look like a freshman at all.
He doesn't look like a freshman, doesn't sound like a freshman, doesn't play like a freshman. He is a very special young talent, I think. He just does some of everything really well. And he's just a winner. He just goes and makes winning plays for his team. And I thought in a matchup where, okay, you didn't have – the other team didn't have a ton of size – you can live with that small ball five, and I think he played the final like 12 or 13 minutes of the second half and then played all of overtime at the five and a good chunk of it at the five spot. So, you know, if Murphy's a guy that misses any time, you know, he did roll his ankle early in that game, and we'll see kind of they just need him to get healthy more than anything else. Maybe that's the Opurim option. You know, you may go with that a little bit more, but I really do like Sebastian Williams-Adams' fit in that front court. He's so versatile, and he's a tough, tough kid down low for a guy who's not overwhelmingly large.
No, no question about it. And a guy that you've been very high on since the first time you saw him. You talk about making some plays down the stretch defensively. Kevin Overton did, and yep. There were some people that were surprised with his offense, but you weren't among those.
No, not at all. I mean, he just didn't have a consistent role at Texas Tech. He looked a lot more like the guy we saw at Drake and at times at Texas Tech last season. He's your leader in that backcourt on defense. He gets, some steals. He just goes and makes a play. Just, you know, there are a couple of possessions there late in the game where they get their big man switched onto him, and they're hunting, and they're saying, hey, let's get a guard on him and go to work. And he steps up and makes plays. So, really good for him to show that kind of clutch factor. And then offensively, yeah, he can shoot. He's a good shooter, but he's got probably the best downhill driver mentality at the two that Auburn has had since Samir Dowdy, maybe, like, you know, a guy that,
yeah,
like,
probably
that's a key part of his game is getting downhill and getting to the rack, and I think that's going to be a big weapon for them this year.
Yeah, so I mean, you can see a lot of the pieces are there. I mean, I can't wait to see Abdul Bashir, you know, get a chance to warm up a little bit. And Kevin Magwood, I mean, there are quite a few pieces here, and that's what tonight I think is all about. I mean, yes, they're playing Merrimack, but tonight's game is just about Auburn getting better and Steven and the staff, you know, being a little more comfortable with different combinations.
Yeah, Merrimack's not a team that's going to give you a ton offensively, I don't think. Not a team that's traditionally a very good scoring team. But, you know, they do a lot of their stuff up with their defense. And, I mean, if you're going to be watching the game tonight, either if you're at the arena or you're get ready. The Merrimack zone is the most unique zone defense in college basketball. No one runs it like that. No one runs it as much as they do. Basically, they run kind of a hybrid 2-3, 1-3-1 that pushes high and wide. It's the only zone defense I've ever seen designed to take away three-point attempts. I've never, you know,
yeah.
Usually it's 2-3.
Yeah, generally zone begs you to shoot from outside.
Yeah, this one begs you to say, you got to make clean passes and try to hit that high-low game and that backside game. And so, playing in the Metro Atlantic Conference, they bank on guys not making crisp passes and not being good ball handlers, and they force turnovers with this defense. And it's just a very well-drilled, their experience, like they know what they're doing out there. Not a tall team. Tall players probably 6'7", 6'8". But they're very well drilled in this zone. And so it's going to really test Auburn to make smart plays, get their, you know, run the stuff that they do really well, make smart plays, you know, when they have it, take care of the ball and just knock down shots, I think is going to be the big thing for them. So it'll be a good test to see how some of those offensive guys get going. On the defensive end, obviously you have an opportunity to play better in this game. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see, can Auburn do a little bit more with their pressure, force some more turnovers? Because I think their offense is going to want to feed off of that this season. Hey, beat beat Merrimack down the floor before they can get into that weird zone. So that'll be something else I'm looking forward to tonight.
Sounds good, Justin. The 7 o'clock tip tonight. Ferg, let everybody know what you were mentioning, some of the things that you've put up recently. Just talk about what folks will find and what you got coming up.
Yeah, I mean, we got a ton of stuff at the Observer. Coaching candidate list that I did earlier this week. The John Cohen breakdown of his press conference. The basketball stuff from the Bethune-Cookman game. We did our friend Henry Patton came on and did a film room about Auburn's defense in basketball. You can check out previewing Auburn Vanderbilt. Dan and I had probably our longest podcast we've ever done today because we just had so much to talk about with both sports. Be at the game tonight. We'll have basketball coverage tomorrow. Have a mailbag probably Saturday morning. I'll be at Vandy for the game this weekend. Got a ton of coverage there. So AuburnObserver.com. It's literally no better time to sign up right now because we're never going to be as busy as we are right now.
Absolutely. Great stuff as always, Justin. Thanks a lot, man. See you over there.
Absolutely. See you, Bill.
All right, Justin Ferguson. Yes, Auburn Observer. And I'm telling you, he puts out – it's unbelievable – the amount, the volume of what he puts out and how in-depth it is. It is just amazing. And while we were over there today, I was going to mention this to him, but I didn't want to embarrass him right then. But Philip Marshall was was talking with Justin while we were waiting for DJ Durkin today and just really telling him, what a great job he has done doing this by himself.
Right.
I mean, it really has. I mean, he's got Dan with him now.
Right.
But I mean, he started this thing up by himself and has done a tremendous
job. He does a great
job.
Very knowledgeable, very passionate about what he does, and he loves Auburn. And you can tell he studies it, and he knows it, and that's what makes him so good. Oh, plus, he's young and enthusiastic.
Energetic, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, we need to get to our next break. We'll open up the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. About a quarter to five here on this Thursday. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Philly Fanatic is up first.
Hey,
how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'll be at that game tonight. And hopefully they'll do a little bit better on their defense and foul shooting. And if they do that, they shouldn't have a problem.
Yeah, what was crazy, though, is they really shot free throws great after the first half. First half was awful. Second half, and then into overtime, if they hadn't shot it well, they wouldn't have won.
No question. And I think the key is Keyshawn Murphy, because when he's in, it's a whole different ball game. Because Joklik, or whatever his name is, he's just kind of slow, and I don't know.
He's still learning the American game after being European. A little slow to react at times. Man, I thought he had an opportunity to have a few rebounds, but he's also got to get stronger with his hands. They took the ball away from him a few times.
Yeah, number 33, which is a good player on their team, he just backed up Djokovic every time with shooting layups.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's why I asked Justin. I'm interested to see if we see the big 7-footer Emeka Opurim some.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see him early on. You know, when we get to SEC, he probably won't play much. But Merrimack Warriors, they're in northeastern Massachusetts, and they play a lot of the same teams as my alma mater, Delaware, did. They play teams like University of Maine, Boston University, Rider, Penn, and they're big sports. They're like most schools in that northeast is lacrosse and ice hockey.
Huh.
I mean, they have these other teams, but they did well in basketball in Division II. And they gave their coach like a 10-year extension, but now they're moving to Division One, and they better put on their big boy pants because in three games down the road they play Florida and Gainesville.
Ooh,
we'll see how good they are.
Yeah, no kidding.
But anyway, I'm excited about it, and I think Auburn will get better with time. I mean, they're just feeling who's going to play where. Yeah, I'm guardedly optimistic, but they're going to have to get better before they get in the SEC.
Oh, no question. And one of the things that when you bring together a lot of guys like this that have been the star on their teams, defense hasn't been their top priority, and that's something that's going to have to be. You know, it was under Bruce, and Steven was the defensive coordinator, so that's what you got to be looking forward to, and you're absolutely right when you were talking about that.
Yeah, Keyshawn Hall, I think he's going to average about 20 points unless the other players on that team come on and start scoring. Everybody's looking for Auburn's all looking for their star guard to score, but so far he hadn't done a whole lot.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll pick it up.
Yep, absolutely. Good hearing from you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Tell you what we'll do. We'll go ahead and get to our final break, and then Knox, you'll be up when we come back. You'll have plenty of time when we return here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle. This is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106AU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio and Drew at the controls. Right back to the drive hotline we go, and Knox is up next. Hey, Knox.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Well, listen, I apologize if y'all have discussed this over the last week or so, but I was just wondering, the offensive line, is it because of poor coaching or because of indecision with the run-pass option? It just seems like every team that we play, their offensive line seems to produce better than us. So I was just wondering what you guys thought about that.
And that's one of the million-dollar questions. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, this was expected to be a much-improved line. There's a lot of experience on it. Granted, you had a couple of new pieces, but still – you had three guys that had played together there in the middle of the offensive line, and I really don't know the answer to that. I mean, it's definitely been a disappointment. One of the things, though, that we've talked about, Knox, that I expect to see Saturday is a more of a commitment to the run, and they have definitely been better run blocking than they have pass blocking. The other thing would be if you can just stay as much as possible out of obvious passing situations. I mean, it's difficult for any offensive line to block when it's 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12. And, man, it seemed like Auburn's just lived in those this year and for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree, Bill. There's a couple of different maybe situations that cause the problems. Number one is, like you said, Bill, when it's 3rd and long, they're going to get their best pass rushers there. They're going to run their twist. They're going to pin their ears back, and they're not worried about you running the football. A new center might have some, even though he's played well, might have some communication problems on your, you know, which way to slide your protections. And then the quarterback holding the ball too long, I think that's been a problem. But if we run the football, it's definitely going to open up the pass. I keep saying that. I know people are probably tired of me saying it, but run the ball.
Well, and also, I wonder when you do have to pass, how come they just don't chunk it down the field to Cam Coleman? Because either you're going to catch it, you're going to have pass interference, or they're going to drop it. And when's the last time they thrown 30, 40 yards down the field to him?
I can't recall, and that's something that is one of the things Perry Thompson said after practice on Tuesday, that they're going to throw the ball down the field more. So we'll see if they do that Saturday as well. Appreciate it, Knox.
All right.
334-321-1390, and Russell is next. Hey, Russell.
Hey, so I've seen this before where Aaron Murray can break down our offensive line problems, and you better believe if Aaron Murray can do it on YouTube – that defensive coordinators know exactly what they've been doing. Jake Thornton and Hugh Freeze refuse to do anything but slide protection, and they know how to line up. Defensive coordinators know how to line up to single a left or a right tackle, because it's always the tackles, if you notice. It's never hardly up the middle. They single on two people on one tackle, and then the running back has to come across to block. So it's been a refusal to go to what's called a 5-0 protection. All you got to do is go to what's called a 5-0. That means you get everything that's inside. The center gets head up, and everything out is pushed in. So you don't protect. You don't slide over to one side. You protect everything that comes inside you. And it's so easy that they just refuse to do it on every single pass play, and all defensive coordinators are doing is the same thing. I just don't understand how they can't just see this. Like, again, if quarterbacks that used to play football can go on YouTube and break it down, you better believe that defensive coordinators in the SEC can do it. Thanks, guys. We're
absolutely understand that. We'll see if they do anything different this Saturday against Vandy. We're halfway done here on the Thursday drive. David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press joins us in hour number two, so stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Dan is down in Troy, where he will be broadcasting the Troy women's basketball game. Meanwhile, Auburn men's basketball back in action tonight against Merrimack. That will be a 7 o'clock tip. So 6:30 will be the airtime over on Wings 94.3 as the Tigers look to go 2-0. Justin Ferguson, who is normally with us on Thursdays when he's not either covering or on his way to cover something, he's headed over to basketball. So he was with us for a good lengthy couple of segments in hour number one, and our thanks to him. So if you didn't hear any of Justin, we encourage you to check out the podcast, which are sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor that's the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The Drive Hotline is sponsored by Skybar, and we're about to head to the Drive Hotline. Welcome in our regular Thursday guest, and that is David Pascal, who just wrapped up his show, his three-hour show on WGOW there in Chattanooga, and a longtime writer for the Chattanooga Times Free Press. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, Bill. Hope you are.
Pretty well, fighting a little sinus something, but no, it's all good. Enjoying this, we're getting a little Indian summer or something here. It's all nearly 80 degrees here today, so it's just been beautiful.
We're supposed to get rain tomorrow night, and then it's supposed to get chilly.
Yeah, I think our forecast, you know, it's not usually ever as cold here as it is up on the mountain or anything, but I think Monday we're looking at a high in the 40s and a low in the 20s, so that'll be a shock for the folks around here.
There it comes, yep.
And much more of a shock than the news that came out this past Sunday. I mean, we talked about it last week, and I was of the opinion that there needed to be absolutely no question before you made a move. And I thought after the performance that Auburn put on offensively Saturday night against Kentucky, only scoring 3 points, that it was no surprise that a change was made Sunday with Hugh Freeze being removed as head coach.
You know, and I was, made sure I listened to that. You know, of course, I'm at the Tennessee-Oklahoma game, which is going on at the same time as Auburn-Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So I was able to see, like, some of the highlights and keep up with it. But I always like to go listen to what the coaches say afterwards. And the fact that Freeze used the so close again. I mean, when you use so close against Georgia or you've lost in College Station or Norman, that's one thing. But when you have just lost to a team that snapped a 10-game SEC losing streak and you use so close again when your offense is clearly regressing, I was actually really that he used that expression again, because that rang really hollow.
Yeah, no question about it. And we will see if there can be any change, offensively. But yes, this had that this was an it's been an historically bad offensive season for Auburn. I mean, you're having to go back, you know, 35 years or so to find an offense that that just doesn't score points. I mean, they, you know, it's not that they, and they don't even, it's not that they move the ball really well that don't score points. It's just, this has really been, especially in conference play, an inept offense. I mean, to score 15 points a game in conference and no other team is scoring fewer than 20 a game.
Yeah, and I mean, the stat that's just so mind-boggling is, and you've seen it before. I mean, Auburn's had some years when they bottomed out, like in 98, and even the 08 team, the 12 team, some of their worst teams that you can name, they all had good defenses. It's just by the end of the year, they're on the field a whole bunch, so when they're playing the Georgias and Alabamas of the world, it could get ugly. But the fact that you've got three teams in college football that have not allowed more than 24 points in any game, one's number one in the country, one's number two, and one's 4 and 5. But, you know, I just think right. I think the legacy of Hugh Freeze will honestly be that he thought that between Peyton Thorne, Robbie Ashford, Hank Brown, Ashton Daniels, and Jackson Arnold, that he thought he could win with that. And you know, he never the quarterback situation, and I hate beating up on college kids, and I'm not wanting to do that, but I mean, the quarterback situation there was just always either mediocre at best or really, really bad.
Oh, there's no question. And if Auburn's offense could have been mediocre, Hugh Freeze would still be the head coach. But yeah, we've talked about it quite a bit. I mean, those decisions, the quarterback decisions, the evaluation, the selection of the quarterbacks is definitely going to go down as that was among the worst decisions that in Hugh's career, definitely at Auburn.
You know, and when you think about it, Bill, even bigger picture, I mean, you think about just how misleading an opening Saturday or opening weekend of college football can be.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
think how much everybody was putting into the LSU-Clemson game. Think about, the Florida State beating Alabama by 2 touchdowns. All, you know, you can also kind of insert Auburn's performance at Baylor.
38 points. Yeah, everything seemed great.
It did. I mean, and people were talking about the offensive line, and you know, whether it was people getting older or the acquisitions they made through the transfer portal, it finally looked like Auburn was going to have a competent offensive line, and you know, by the Oklahoma game, you're like, that may not be the case.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
Who just walked in?
I'll tell you guys a funny story about that in the next segment. But it's great to talk to you, David. And, you know, something I noticed about the Auburn quarterback room, I'd love to run it by you as a student of history in the SEC, but, like, it seems like things are especially bad at Auburn when the coach has been there more than 1 year and the quarterback room feels like it has no answers in it. Because that's how you could describe Tuberville's 2008. That's how you could describe Gene Chizik's 2012. That's how you could describe Brian Harsin's 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended things for all three of those coaches. And at the moment, feels like Hugh Freeze's...
Oh, it definitely ended Hugh's.
Hugh Freeze's 2025 feels like it joins the list, which makes Gus Malzahn's termination in 2020 with Bo Nix, like, it stand out even more as an anomaly or an outlier among the other ones. But yeah, what do you think of the relationship between when a coach seemingly has no answers at quarterback on the roster at Auburn? It usually means he's not going to be the coach much longer.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you bring it up, Dan, because in 1997, when Auburn won the SEC West for the first time, I was just like, man, Damian Craig is just an absolute wizard. I wonder what Auburn's going to look like with him gone next year. And you saw Auburn fall to 3-8 with Ben Leard, and that was the end of Terry Bowden. But then Tuberville got there in 99 and turned Leard, you know, and Leard in 99 was a completely different quarterback. And Auburn was a completely different team in 99. When you think about what they did to Georgia in Athens, that's usually the exception to the rule. But you're right. I mean, those years that you reeled off, I mean, I'll never forget being at the 2012 Iron Bowl and watching Bama go up 49-0, seven possessions in the game, and Auburn, you know, they couldn't even get first downs, and just what a depleted coaching staff that looked like going into the elevator because they knew the pink slips were coming. But yeah, I mean, it is a definite trend that the quarterback play in all those years you mentioned, just wretched.
Well, one thing now, not that Hugh Freeze will have the opportunity, he had it twice, actually he had it three times. It's much easier to acquire quarterbacks now because they don't have to sit out a year transferring. We've seen so many schools, you know, find the answer quickly, and that's something that will be incumbent on whoever the next Auburn head coach is to do.
And Auburn's opponent on Saturday is as vivid an example of that as you have in the SEC right now.
Yeah, and I guess Hugh Freeze got to avoid potentially losing a third straight double-digit game to Diego Pavia.
Fourth straight, remember, his last year at Liberty, New Mexico State and Pavia.
That's right. It would be four straight. Let me ask you this about Hugh Freeze, and I don't want to make this a beat-up Hugh Freeze call, but y'all are down there. I'm not. Is there, you know, sometimes when you have coaches removed, when Napier was let go, there were a lot of people that were just like, Napier was a class act. He just didn't win enough. And you know how rabid Florida fans and how ugly Florida fans can get sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this seems like with Hugh Freeze, it seems like a clean break. I mean, you don't hear many people say Hugh Freeze wasn't given enough time.
No.
I mean, I know Hugh Freeze said after the, you know, in the post game after Kentucky that he'd like for people to have more patience or whatever that quote said.
But he understood at least.
But he understood. And yeah, I think that's a, you know, if, yeah, I thought that one of the reasons not to make a move was on the slim chance, not to make a move earlier in the season, David. It felt like there was a slim chance next year's quarterback was maybe on the roster. Right. And you gave a guy a chance to play and prove himself. I think you saw enough of Ashton Daniels against Kentucky to burst that bubble, at least with the guys that you've seen for a substantial period of time at this point. And once you got there with Hugh Freeze, it's like, are you going to let him, if you keep him, are you going to let him go back to the market again and shop for a quarterback in the transfer portal, considering the results you've had thus far with his evaluation? And I think that was part of the reason that, to me at least, like that's one of the things that forced the issue on Sunday.
And again, y'all are down there and know more about it than I do, but like with Deuce Knight, he was a kid that actually came up to Tennessee for a cup of coffee at Lipscomb Academy and actually, you know, I guess he never had an address up here and it actually got Lipscomb Academy in 2 years PSSAA probation. But how close is he to being ready? I mean, obviously you would think given the Auburn's quarterback play to this point, he'd at least get a sniff.
Well, it'll be interesting. I don't know that you could expect to see him, if at all, Saturday. But they've got an open date, and then Mercer. Something I really am intrigued to see if we get an opportunity to see Deuce against Mercer and get to see him for more than just a brief appearance.
Are you surprised, Bill? And I'll you know, David, you too. Like, are you guys surprised that they didn't push the Deuce Knight button already? I mean, it seemed like maybe there was
Hugh Freeze? DJ Durkin?
Well, think about this. I mean, with Hugh Freeze, with his Auburn tenure on the line, at no point thought about going to the highly touted true freshman.
That tells you that Hugh Freeze and DJ Durkin and Derek Nix still feel the best opportunity they have to win right now is one of the older guys.
And I guess that's as close to an answer as we can give you, David, because they still want to go with the upperclassmen.
It's an interesting dynamic because you can go back a quarter century and Jim Don in his last year at Georgia in 2000, he had a team he really liked. They lost an early game at South Carolina, but Quincy Carter gets lost for the season, and he plays Corey Phillips, a walk-on that, you know, grew up with Ben Laird, never chose to take the red shirt off David Green. And, of course, as it turned out, he left David Green for Mark Richt, and David Green at the time became the winningest quarterback, you know, with 42 wins. No one had ever won that much. It's been broken, but it was interesting. Donnan never chose to take the red shirt off David Green, and it wound up kind of costing him his deal.
Yeah, well, Deuce could play from this point on and not have to be concerned about the red shirt. David, love to hear what's the buzz up in Chattanooga about the Auburn opening. I mean, we're hearing three or four names: John Sumrall, you know, Kenny Dillingham, obviously DJ Durkin, some Eli Drinkwitz. What are you hearing up there?
Yeah, I mean, again, y'all are going to be more in tune. Sumrall's a name that I've heard the most. The Durkin thing would be kind of interesting. Obviously, he's got a little platform here to try to do it. Who knows, if you win the Iron Bowl, that could change everything. But Sumrall, I would have to say, is probably the name I've heard the most, even though you obviously have the Dillingham tie as well. It's just an interesting dynamic because, and I don't want to keep beating the dead horse, but, you know, again, it's still so mind-boggling about the firing of Malzahn in a pandemic when you didn't have anybody lined up. And I just think it's almost still snowballing because I just don't know where people put Auburn right now in the pecking order. I mean, Penn State, Florida, LSU, are all those jobs ahead of Auburn? And I would probably say right now they're all viewed as better jobs than Auburn right now, just because, and I know LSU's kind of dealing with a little bit of this chaos right now, especially when you get the state government and all that mixed in. But, you know, Auburn just, you know, after Malzahn, you've just kind of had this cycle of Harsin not even lasting 2 years, Freeze not ever lasting 3 years. I mean, it is a tough, tough deal from the outside looking in to try to please the folks at Auburn.
Would you say, though, because, I mean, I would consider Florida, LSU, and Penn State potentially top 10 jobs nationally. Like, maybe there are 12 or 13 teams, you know, on that list of 10, you know, sort of, you know, stretching to find those top 10 jobs. But I think all three of those are realistically, like, top 10 national jobs. And I would wonder, for the Auburn job, like, what do you think is appealing to a potential coach right now? You mentioned that, yeah, I mean, there are some warning signs in that Brian Harsin and Hugh Freeze both got the plug pulled pretty early, relative to a coaching tenure. But what do you think would be attractive about the situation Auburn has right now, with its roster and with its, the general program in general?
Yeah, and this is where I honestly, and it's interesting, having gone to Auburn and now having kids at Tennessee and being familiar with those two programs, those are two programs with a lot of history. And they've won a couple of AP national championships each, but you start looking in the rearview mirror, and Auburn's last SEC title is 2013, and Tennessee's last title is 1998, and you can even stick Florida in there at 2008. With this conference realignment and bringing in all these, you know, behemoths that they've brought in, and I'm not just talking about with track records of success, I'm talking about money too. So I don't know where the Auburns and the Tennessees rank in terms of money. And I think just one thing that just really hurts and has hurt Auburn for a while now is the fact that you've had the best coach in college football history with the best run at Alabama, and he turns it over, and now the best college football coach with multiple national championships is at Georgia. And so Auburn's not the flagship school of either state, obviously. I think with Alabama and Georgia being right there, I think that makes it really difficult. I mean, you ask what makes it appealing. They do have money. They do have, I mean, the fact that Auburn's had 20 straight sellouts, that Freeze right. went 20 for 20 in sellouts, and that's a subject for another day. The fact they went 9-11 of those 20 games, and most of the wins are over Alabama, A&M, and Samford, and whoever they beat. But, you know, I think the fan base, I think the loyalty, I think the, you know, all the basics are there as far as a nice stadium, money, recruiting areas. The Auburn's always got a good brand. I don't think they have to worry about the brand. I mean, there is the reputation of playing second fiddle to both Bama and Georgia. But, again, that just makes it makes it tough when you've got LSU, A&M, Texas, Oklahoma. I mean, it's just and you get the plug pulled on you in 2.5 years or 1.5 years if it doesn't work out right away.
Yeah, we will see. I mean, I think that Auburn has enough right now. There's enough resources that with the pool of candidates, which is a little different than it was a few years ago. I think they just need to find the right fit. That's what you've got to do. That's what every school has to do. So many times there's someone that comes along and you're just absolutely sure this is a can't miss, sure fire. And you look at the top 10. We were talking about it a while ago. Look at the top 10 and see where most of these guys came from. They weren't a lot of them weren't those, you know, big names. Everybody in the country's been after this guy for a few years. Kind of deals. It's just right place, right time, with the right support and the right talent, and you can win. So it's going to be really interesting. There are more and more schools. I mean, man, we've never seen this many openings at this time of year. Before we run out of time, I mean, it's not the most glamorous week, but there's some interesting ball games this weekend around the conference. I mean, I think everybody expected Alabama-LSU to be a huge ball game. Alabama is a solid favorite, and I don't see any reason that they don't win by about that amount, David.
Yeah, I like Alabama in this game by at least a touchdown. This is a game that through the years I just love the talent that's been in this game, mm-hmm. and it's kind of interesting because now you're seeing Ty Simpson at the top of the quarterback charts where you saw Garrett Nussmeier at the top of the NFL draft boards at the beginning of the year. Saw a stat this week that the 2019 game that had Burrow and Tua, of the 44 starters right. in that game, 37 got drafted.
Yeah.
A&M Missouri is one of the really interesting games.
This is Missouri. Missouri can't lose and expect to still be in the playoff picture.
They're rebounding.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they win if they're in. I think they're going to be a team that gets hurt by the fact that you've lost Pribula and Horn both, and now you've got a freshman, and I just don't know if they've got the offensive firepower to kind of work their way back up. I mean, this would obviously be a must win for them, but I just think Texas A&M's just too strong across the board.
Hey, what do you think of the job Elko is doing and sort of the lessons you could learn about making the sensible hire from the success he's had? And also, what do you think of Colin Klein as a candidate for any of these jobs? Because the way their offense is performing and the way that quarterback is developing, you know, and maybe this is just because I remember him as that awesome Kansas State quarterback a decade ago, yeah. but I... You know, I could see someone kicking the tires potentially on Colin Klein as an answer.
They could. I mean, no. Texas A&M is, you know, they just kind of have, you know, when things go bad, you'll lose a game 17-14, and then the next week you lose it 37-34. You know, Texas A&M's just the opposite of that. They won a 16-10 game over Auburn. They won a 41-40 game over Notre Dame. They've just been the best team. I know it's cliche. They've been the best team on the field every Saturday. And Elko's kind of one of these, you know, it's kind of a neat story. I mean, he didn't have near the fanfare or near the resume of his predecessor, Jimbo Fisher. But I kind of like listening to him in interviews. I mean, because he tells people to shut the heck up when they talk about last year. He's like, this isn't last year. And he knows it. I mean, they were 5-0 in the league last year and fell apart. And there were, you know, Sumlin would get to 4-0 or 5-0 and fall apart, and so would Jimbo. But, you know, this is a team that has a chance to get to 6-0 for the first time. I mean, it's just a team that's, you know, Marcel Reed, he's a kid I saw in ninth grade come to Chattanooga and win a playoff game over Baylor School here. I mean, he's been good for a long time, but, I mean, the steps he just keeps taking and getting better and better is really, really impressive.
And Texas A&M, another example of sometimes just because a school doesn't get the first guy that they wanted, things work out pretty well because it could well be Mark Stoops at Texas A&M.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, the two teams that have really done a good job of kind of, you know, to this point, just banishing their past, not that their pasts are embarrassing, but Texas A&M and Ole Miss have both had kind of reputations of choking in the big one. And you know, I know Ole Miss had a close call against Washington State a couple of weeks ago or whenever it was, but Texas A&M and Ole Miss just really do seem focused on the here and now, which is a credit to Elko and Kiffin.
Hey, Georgia, the number 5 team this week in the first BCS college football playoff rankings in Starkville. Can this ball game be interesting? I've got a feeling that it could.
Yeah, I think if you add it up, the two teams have played 12 total games against power conference teams, and out of those 12 games, 9 of them have been one possession. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Georgia and Mississippi State play a ton of one-possession games, so I think this could be pretty doggone close. I mean, Georgia doesn't run away and hide from anybody, and it will be interesting. The only way I think this thing gets out of hand is if Mississippi State, after ending that long losing streak, just kind of savors it too much, and you can tell. Right.
Yep, and then I got to get your thoughts on Auburn-Vandy. I mean, Vandy has just been an amazing story. Last week it felt like, man, if that ball game had been a few minutes longer, they might have been able to win it as they nearly recovered that onside kick.
Yeah, and what is the line still around 7 on this?
Yes.
Okay, I really like Auburn and the points in this just because that defense is so good and has been so good all year. I still don't know, even with the change – we've seen Auburn find different ways to lose games. I mean, the four mm-hmm. quarters this year have just been disastrous. And so I still like Vandy at home, but I really do like Auburn and the points. I picked it in the paper today, 16-13 Commodores. I just think it stays low scoring. I'd be shocked if this game got in the mid to upper 20s.
Oh, I think if DJ Durkin can keep this game close into the fourth quarter, it would exceed a lot of expectations for what folks are believing, you know, this Auburn team is going to do down the stretch, and that would show that the team is still fighting, right? Like, you know, if this game, I think if this game,
I think he's got the team.
Yeah, right? I mean, if this thing's a game in the fourth quarter, if it's a one possession game again for Auburn, I know you're not in the business of moral victories. You'd like to see
not anymore
actual victories, but no, I think that would be a. I mean that'd be impressive.
Well, and of course the gargantuan key to Auburn is Derek Nix is going to be calling all the plays, right?
Right. Yep.
I mean, and so that becomes the huge. That's what I'm curious to see. How different do they look offensively, and what changes offensively? Because as y'all know, I'm not telling y'all anything new. It can't get any worse offensively.
No, you're
3 points against Kentucky.
No, you are right about that, David. What you got planned this weekend?
You know something? I am going to chill. I get to enjoy an open date, so I am absolutely looking forward to that.
I bet. Well, enjoy. We really appreciate it. Before we go, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you're doing.
Sure thing. TimesFreePress.com for the articles, and WGOW for Sport Talk, which is 2 to 5 Central each day.
All right, David. Thanks again. We really enjoyed spending some time with you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Y'all have a great weekend, too.
All right, David Paschal joining us. We'll get to our first break. Open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive. Dan's back.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan.
Hello.
How'd the game go?
It was a, Trojans are off to a hot start. I don't want to get ahead of myself. It's the first week of the season. They are sharp. You know, they bring back 3 all-conference players from last year. They were really helped out. So Chanda Rigby in her 14th season coaching Troy women's basketball. Ed Rigby, her husband, accomplished high school football
know
coach
him, know
in,
him. Yes.
In the state. Yeah, you guys, the Rigbys and the Duns.
I recruited the school.
Yeah, he's a she was really helped out. She was a junior college coach before she got to Troy. She's recruited the junior college ranks pretty heavily. A lot of the players on this year's team have some experience in junior college, and a lot of them got a Pavia year. Last year, a lot of them were seniors who were then given another year of eligibility through the Pavia ruling. And so Troy's extremely experienced with players who are familiar with the system. And they played Mississippi Valley State today, the Devilettes out of Itabena, Mississippi.
Itabena, great catfish.
A place you know.
Yeah, he mentioned you yesterday when he was talking.
I went there last year and had some catfish.
Yeah,
Coach,
I remember.
And
I told you
to. In your honor. And so... 18-17 after one quarter. Valley State's rebuilding. They actually, you know, our buddy Jasher Cox knows the coach. He was at Allen University while Jasher was there. Okay. Coach James at Valley. It was 18-17 Troy after one quarter. 18-0 run in the second quarter for Troy.
Wow.
15-0 run. 8-0 run by a girl in the final 45 seconds of the third quarter. That's
Two threes and
two free throws.
Okay.
And so, I mean, she caught fire, and Troy ends up winning by a substantial margin. So two blowouts so far for the Trojans, and they've got some SEC teams coming up on the docket. Missouri and Alabama are scheduled. Kansas State as well. So yeah, excited about that. And a game I nearly missed, Bill.
Yeah,
I was. I'll disclose it to you guys. I was unaware through a little bit of through, and I could have been more diligent, I suppose. But the scheduling mix up. I was unaware until pretty late last night that this was a noon. And
yeah,
not a 6
I wasn't. P. I was really surprised when I saw you.
Yeah, and it was, and I was fortunately I realized it in time to make it. To the game with plenty of time to spare, but it was very nearly
I mean, I did play by play for a long, long time. I came close,
yeah,
a couple of times, but never missed one.
No, never. I have a Cal
there after tip or kick.
I have a Cal Ripken pitch. I have a Cal Ripken esque streak going, yeah, right now with the Trojans. So I'm. Yeah, I'm excited, and we're going to see some exotic places this year. I'm going to get my credential got approved. I will see Auburn
in Vegas.
In Vegas, so I'm going to see Auburn, Michigan. I'm going to be courtside for that at Mandalay Bay. I'm going to see Auburn and whoever they draw on Wednesday as well. I'd be there Monday, but Troy's got a game that night, so I can't make it out to the tournament in time. But yeah, excited about going to Vegas, and excited so far about the returns on this Troy team. They're pressing. How about this? They started pressing after like made and missed baskets. Now they're just
press all the time.
Yeah, they're at any given moment they can turn the press on, uh-huh, and it's been really effective so far.
Well, you could make it over to Auburn men's basketball if you wanted to tonight.
Gonna try to do that. And something I talked about with Justin Ferguson, pivoting to Auburn men's basketball a little bit. You mentioned it with Keyshawn, and I think it's true of both. Like, Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford are not necessarily players who were brought up as defensive stoppers. Mm. And I think that there times where their ability to, their offensive game has masked, has allowed them to be less than stellar defensive players. Auburn needs them.
They do.
Like, both. Like, I just don't think Auburn's defense is in position where anyone, even their best offensive players, can be defensive liabilities, or else you got a real problem on your hand, because it's like, well, these guys have to play, but your defense is fighting with one hand tied behind their back when it's like,
yeah, you can't play team defense if it's not all five guys.
Now here's playing. The thing. I think Tahad and Keyshawn are both, like,
I think they're capable.
That's what I mean. Like, if it would be bleak if you were, and you've seen that before, where it's like a really talented offensive guy who's not going to get better defensively, mm-hmm, and is not going to be anything but a liability on that end of the floor. I don't think there's anyone necessarily in the rotation who fits that description.
Nah,
but I think with Tahad and Keyshawn, I know it could be tempting to just be an offense, like almost an offense only guy. You can't be that. Like, this team's going to need its best players to. But there's also, coach, there's also something to be said for the best players setting an example, right? True. And I think when Tahad and Keyshawn and Murph appear to be among the best players on this team, like, the harder they go defensively, one would think that's going to lead that's going to lead the rest of the group.
Yeah, especially the younger guys.
Yeah, for sure.
More experience.
On a team where, mm-hmm, what, four guys have D1 experience.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's those three in Overton. And you don't have to, you don't have to worry about Overton.
No, not him defensively. I don't think you have to worry about Elijah Freeman much either defensively.
No, I think that he's, you know what, you might have to worry about exuberance sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
Aggressiveness, mm-hmm, but effort, no, not at all. And I think that's something where, Stephen Pearl's probably going to, he's going to demand as much as he can,
yeah,
out of his, mm-hmm, best players to make sure that he's getting the most out of everybody else.
All right, tell you what we'll do. We'll go ahead and get to our next break, which would normally be the bottom of the hour break. But since we don't have calls, we'll go ahead and get caught back up, and love to hear from you in the final 20 minutes of the Thursday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio, and Drew at the controls. Auburn and Merrimack tonight over at Auburn Arena, and looking forward to seeing, you know, I wonder if we'll see Emeka Opurim tonight. I was a little surprised we didn't see him at all the other night.
You know, interested to see what the front court rotation looks like, right? I mean, the fact that, and I mean,
Keyshawn and Sway are going to play.
Well, both Keyshawns.
Yes.
Yeah. The
Murph and Sway.
Key Murph Sway.
Keyshawn Hall is really, to me, he's more a three.
He's playing some with the front court, though. I mean, they're running him as a, I know he can be a three at times. They're running him as a 4-2. But no, I think Flip's going to have to be out there as two, or Phil, as I like to call him. You've got you would think that they might have to find some minutes for Emeka.
If you're going to need some rim protection now, I don't think that, you know, everything we know about Merrimack, I don't think that should be a huge problem tonight.
I was really impressed by Williams Adams offensively. Oh, yes. He probably is also, I mean, I know the plus minus wasn't terribly kind to him. Like, he's someone who probably is gonna evolve as a defensive player in his first year. What's the minutes restriction like on Murph? Right, like what is he?
I think he's getting better. Yeah. I think he's getting better. I mean, he has said that he feels he's pretty close to 100% now.
Yeah, and then with Phil, is it going to be kind of a roller coaster where he has games where he's? I mean, already if you count the exhibitions, you've had some games where he looked like a real problem for the other team, and you had some games where he looked like he was still trying to find his footing in Division I basketball. I wonder if that's going to be the story of his freshman season.
Yeah, could be.
Night to night, it could vary depending on opponent, if he's going to be able to kind of, maybe it's a matchup, that, you know, matchup dependent.
Well, you know, the other night too, I mean, you saw him be really frustrated after he goaltended.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like...
you're allowed to do that over
that's
there.
That's exactly right. You could do that there. He did it, and it's like he was like, oh, what? And then he realized it, and it looked like that affected him for a couple of minutes, and Bethune-Cookman took advantage.
Well, we say, though, I mean, and Coach, I'm sure you... Like if you had a player who just made a mistake or a penalty they're unhappy about, even though it was flagged or something, like what's the message to get them to flush it and stay in the moment and stay present enough to help you on the next play rather than worrying about the play that didn't go their way earlier?
Yeah, that's a tough one because every kid is different. Some guys it doesn't affect them. Some guys go, like you said, in the tank. They start pouting. They put their head down. They lose a step. They lose the man on the next time down the court. But you really can't make a big deal about it. I mean, you want to choke them. I mean, you want to just strangle them. And
thankfully, you know, we were allowed to talk to you because you resisted the urge to do that your entire career.
And you want to grab them by the face mask and all those things like that I had done to me when I was playing. But probably the best thing is just not overreact. But then you have coaches that react. I mean, I've seen coaches jerk them right out of the game, put them on the bench, send them down to the end of the bench. That cannot – and I think it's who you're coaching to, what type of individual it is. Is he just a hard-nosed, tough kid that doesn't bother him? Or is he going to –
Probably matters how many mistakes he's made too, right? How many strikes?
Probably does.
How many strikes are we talking about?
Or if he's averaging 25 or 40, he's going to be staying in the game. But every kid's different. I mean, you just got to know who you're coaching.
Yeah, that's always fascinating to me. I mean, you hear it more with quarterbacks. I would imagine it's probably true with like a receiver after a drop.
Yeah.
You know, the thought of like the next time.
A kicker's
a great example.
Kick.
How about a defensive back who just gave up a big play?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you know, getting folks
what's
to.
What's the old, you got to have the memory of a goldfish.
Yeah, I love that. No, I mean, it's absolutely right. I mean, you got to keep, like, if you're performing, if you're acting or singing or dancing,
yeah,
and you make a mistake. Forget. You can't stop. No. Like, if it's a live performance, right, you can't stop. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't, you just got to like move on to the next sentence.
Maybe that's why those guys, you can't understand them half the time when they're singing. They just make up stuff.
Yeah, but, that was the.
But I think, again, it's who you coaching. You, as a coach, you got to know. There's some guys you can just browbeat. Yeah, thank you. And grab them and do all that. And there's others you can't say anything to. But talking about quarterbacks, take Bobby Petrino. I've never seen a guy harder on quarterbacks. He doesn't care. And they get tougher, and they're pretty darn good, most of them. Yeah, or
they're gone.
Right.
You know, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I
with the portal, that changes a lot of coaching. Unfortunately.
I wonder if he mellowed over the years, but you know who I heard stories? I heard that a younger Gus Malzahn was especially tough as a quarterback.
I think he demanded perfection. It was all about exact steps and turn. I mean, everything. I mean,
quarterback whisper at one time. Yeah, but I'm telling you, that's a hard thing.
You know what, though? Have you noticed who's leading the nation in total offense?
Yeah.
Florida State.
How about
leading
that,
the nation?
Yeah.
In total offense this year.
They're still.
Well, are they 4-4 and he's leading the nation?
Yeah, they're averaging better than 510 yards a game in total
offense. Huge win. Everybody pick Wake Forest to beat
them. Yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean, that game a couple of weeks ago where they were, they were dead and buried against Miami.
Yeah.
And they come back and make that like a shockingly competitive game. And if it weren't for the two worst onside kicks I've ever seen in my life. Like Florida State might have kept scoring in that game, but it's cool to see Gus doing well. That's the guy that I find myself rooting for, and I mean, I remember, not to bring it up, Coach, but I mean, leading up to that 06 season when he got to Arkansas, and you'd heard like, oh, Houston Nutt went and hired a high school coach. High school coach with four
to bring in half the team
right down the street.
So, the Springdale Wizard with the four different players. Yeah.
Who his offensive coordinator was?
Was that
Eli
Drinkwitz? Yeah, I was going to say
Springdale's.
You know, how about that?
And the thought that
that's where we stayed when we went out there in Springdale.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And 20 years later,
he's a guru,
and he's still. I think there are people just like them. I think there are people who want him to be Arkansas's coach. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, with an offense that's leading the nation and his ties, like, it maybe is it's overly familiar. And
maybe after all this time.
Some people would say it's a look to the past, but to that I would say what you just said, Bill.
Who's leading the nation in total offense?
He's the offensive
coach. Florida State.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's – and some of the other ideas I've heard for Arkansas sound really interesting, too. There are good coaches in Texas. There are
of course if Gus if he were to do that, would he give it up again? It'd be tough to give it up.
I don't know.
When you just led the nation in total offense. But we've spent I don't know how much time recently talking about how difficult it is
to do both.
To be a head coach and be a play caller.
Maybe in year one, when you're trying to turn something around, you roll up your sleeves and you actually call the plays, and then if you get it turned around, you hand it off to somebody. Would be my thinking. I don't know. I don't. I mean,
because you know,
or maybe you delegate. I mean,
think it's so hard for those guys.
Well, especially if you're successful at it, because a lot of times it's Auburn tried. Auburn tried it when Bobby left. It's like you try to run. Okay. You can have the same playbook. You can have the same plays, but if you don't have the feel for setting it up and when to call those plays. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the same.
So plan B in that situation would be, all right, then Arkansas needs to find the kind of coach that would hire Gus Malzahn to run the offense and leave him relative.
Mike Norvell is probably not getting a lot of love in Tallahassee. Arkansas goes and hires Norvell and they come up with some other money to get a better defense.
One of several defensive head coaches that have been mentioned for some of these jobs. Like I don't know. Like that's an interesting thought.
I just wonder how many coaches Gus would be an offensive coordinator for. I think it's probably a very small.
Yeah, but at the same time, it sounds like he's having a blast.
Norvell have a long relationship too.
And you wonder with the success Florida State's having, like, would he want to go back to being a head coach, or is he having a blast as the offense?
I've got a feeling he's enjoying just coaching.
Yeah.
And not having to put up with all the other stuff. Coach.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really seen anybody do what he did. He wasn't forced out. He just
You saw Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, these days, when you've seen the big name, longtime coaches go, "Hey, this isn't for me," and then you see Chip Kelly and Gus decide, "You know, I think I'll be an offensive. I think I'll be a coordinator that's instead of a head coach."
I mean, to an extent, the market decided that's what Petrino was, right? Because some head coaching opportunities went belly up.
It wasn't Bobby voluntarily saying, "No, I'd rather be in a coordinator."
But it's not all that dissimilar, right? I mean, he's a guy who probably
wants to coach.
Somebody mention, a couple weeks ago, and they used Gus as an example of like, oh, much better coordinator than coach. And it's like, Gus Malzahn won a lot of games as a head coach. Like, there are better examples to me of the darling coordinator everybody knew was going to do well that never panned out as a head coach. And Will Muschamp
one really good season at Florida.
But a phenomenal phenomenal defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Some guys, I mean, look, Petrino is one of the great, I mean, you've said it before, Coach. Like, mm-hmm. one of the top percentage of coaches you've ever been around.
Right. Yes.
I wonder if a lot of his success will be. I mean, you wonder how much of, I don't know. He was a head coach for a long time. He's probably like, we remember his offensive coordinator success at Auburn.
Right. I think a lot of folks will think of him. Yeah, they'll think of him as a head coach.
Yeah.
All right, we need to get to our
moved around a little bit.
Yeah, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Thursday Drive.
Kia of Auburn.
Back on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes here on the Thursday Drive. Don, great to have you in here again this afternoon.
Thank you. Anytime. I'll be back tomorrow.
Three times in a week.
I know. Golly.
How about that? And Dan and I should be here as well tomorrow as we get ready for the weekend and look back at basketball from tonight.
You're headed up to the you're headed up to the arena to check out tonight's action and looking forward to seeing what Auburn can do in the after the scare against Bethune. Yeah, yeah. We'll see what game two.
Pretty good football game on tonight too, Dan.
Looks like.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but South Florida and Texas, who's the team that beat?
Is it UTSA?
Memphis? Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of folks talk. I mean, Jeff Traylor's a great coach at UTSA, and a lot of folks talking about Alex Golish.
And then one that would have been a great game is Appalachian State and Georgia Southern, but they're both like 4-4.
Ooh.
But going into the season, you'd say, boy, that's going to be a great matchup.
Coach, we'll do this again tomorrow.
Thank you.
We will be back tomorrow. We are out of time, though, here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in and join us tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
I got it.